Good morning. The markets are moving and so are you from the BizNews studios. This is BizNews Daybreak for Friday, the 5th of December, 2025. I'm Alec Hogg, and here is the context you need to win the day. Well, no matter what seems to be happening on the geopolitical front, where South Africa is once again boxing with the United States, the rand continues to power stronger last night, breaking 17 against the US dollar. And this isn't the first time. It's been flirting with that level for a little while. And in the last month, well, mid-month, it managed to break through 17. In other words, less than 17 rands for each dollar. And that is where it's trading at the moment. It's picked up 3% in the past month. Internationally, overnight while we were sleeping, a solid day, a steady day for markets in the United States. The NASDAQ was up by 0.25%. Drawn there or pulled there by Meta, more on that in a moment, the S&P 500 index finishing just slightly in the green. As far as our favorite stocks on BizNews are concerned, Palantir, 178 Rand, It was up by 1% to $177.92. Certainly nothing to do with rands, it's all dollars. Google was off slightly, Amazon 1.5% down, ASML, after that phenomenal run in the last week, dropped 2.7% last night. I suppose all good things had to come to an end at some point in time. Apple down 1.25%. Tesla continues to steam ahead, 1.74% stronger, and Uber a little bit firmer. But the big news of the evening was Meta. The reason is, that share was up 3.5%. Now, we know Meta is in our portfolio. It's one of the Mag 7s. It's had a dreadful time of late. And, it's had a dreadful time in the past few months. But since about mid-month, 19th of November, it's really been on a rip. Come from around $580. And last night, it closed at $661. And there's a reason for that, which we'll get into in just a moment. Outside of the Meta story here on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, it was a quietish day. Also, the all-share index was down by 0.33%, with financials 0.5% up and industrials just slightly off. Resources were the ones that pulled the market lower. That was 1.75% down. But let's just kick off with that big story of the day. The Financial Times of London headlines, Meta set to slash spending on Metaverse as Zuckerberg shifts focus to AI. They're going to cut the budgets there, says the FT, by about 30%. Now, you might recall, it's not even 5 years ago, that Facebook, as it then was, changed its name to Meta to reflect Zuckerberg's belief that the metaverse was the next big thing. They put huge amounts of effort and money behind it, and it hasn't quite paid off. You'll hear from Carol Mazar and friends at Bloomberg on the Stock Movers podcast, which comes out after the market closes in the United States, and exactly what went on with Meta. They also cover Intel and interest rates.
It is the number one gainer, in fact, in the NASDAQ 100 stock, finishing off its highs. At its highs, was up about 5.7%, but finishing with a gain of about 3.5% for the Thursday trade. That exclusive by our own Kurt Wagner on how Mark Zuckerberg is expected to cut resources when it comes to building out the metaverse. Remember back in 2021, that's what it was all about. They changed the company name. It was going to be the future of the company. Sounds like they are dialing that back. Executives have apparently discussed potential budget cuts as much as 30% for the Metaverse group next year, and that could.
Did you see the joke online now? Everybody's trying to buy up domain names that they think Meta's going to when they change their name to something AI or whatever.
I said to Kurt, "Do you think it's going to be Meta AI?" And he's like, "I don't even want to report
that out.
Why not,
man? It costs a couple $100. You may make a few million."
I love.
Yeah. Well, how about a little underperformance? Because I'm looking at the decliners. Intel leading the pack there for the S&P 500 today. Not a great day for Intel investors. Stock off about 7.5%. But you know what? It's still up about 100% year to date. great coming off a strong Q3 numbers. But Intel says it's going to keep its networking division in-house. So this reverses plans that it had to spin it off or sell a stake. And it also has ended talks with Ericsson, which we know had been exploring a potential investment in the network and edge group there at Intel. So Intel down more than 7% today.
All right. Let's take a quick look at yields. Another move higher pretty much across the curve today. I guess you could kind of call it a parallel shift. 3 to 4 basis points pretty much from top to bottom. And I think, Alexis, you kind of hit it on the head a little bit earlier. This idea that this is a market right now kind of in waiting for next week, next Wednesday, where we do get that Fed decision. Almost near certainty we get a 25 basis point cut. But more importantly, what comes after that, not just with rate cuts, but of course with Fed leadership.
There were really two big stories in South Africa yesterday as far as business was concerned. Let's start with the good news first. Vodacom has taken a 36 billion rand bet in acquiring another 20% in Safaricom. And by doing so, they have now got control of Kenya's number one cell phone provider. In fact, Kenya's dominant cell phone provider. They deliver about two-thirds of that market. They got 62 million customers. And Safaricom is well known, or best known, for owning M-Pesa. Anyway, the investment is costing 36 billion rand, and maybe put it into dollars, $2.1 billion. That's proper money in anybody's terms. 15% is coming from the government, and 5% is coming from the UK headquartered multinational Vodafone, which is the controlling company of Vodacom. So why is all of this so important? Well, what it means is that Safaricom now becomes part of Vodacom. It's controlled by Vodacom. When you go over 50%, you get to make the calls. And that means that it will be able to rely on Vodacom for further capital investment. Safaricom itself is very cash flush. So all round, it's a fabulous, fabulous deal, and only able because of decisions taken some time ago to invest in Safaricom over the years. Now they've got to the point where they can take a controlling interest. As far as the landscape is concerned, it really does rocket Vodacom's numbers, because now it can consolidate the revenues and other parts of Safaricom, which, whereas in the past it was equity accounting. And really what that means is it brings in 100% into its books instead of 35% as in the past. And what this means is that Vodacom gets very close to MTN for the title of Africa's biggest telecoms company. The annual revenues are now going to be at 210 billion rand. That's if you take its most recent reporting results versus and annualize them versus MTN's 213. So there's nothing in it between the two of them. And the market cap is pretty close as well. MTN's had a stellar year with the share price there going up 70%. I think at one point in time there was a concern about its exposure to the Middle East, in particular to Iran and Syria. Well, it's out of Syria a long time ago, but its Iranian exposure remains strong, and there are big questions about that. But it seems though investors are looking through that, and MTN's market cap is at 288 billion, whereas Vodacom is 272 billion. So again, there's quite a close contest there. Vodacom's up by a solid, but not as spectacular, 28% this year. Where MTN is ahead quite comfortably is on subscribers, 291 million, as against Vodacom's 223 million. These are incredible numbers for South African companies. When you look at them in a global context, these are proper global businesses. And the acquisition of the controlling stake of Safaricom really puts Vodacom into the big league, not just as part of the Vodafone empire. Are they going to be putting too much money in? Are shareholders concerned about that? Well, not really, because there is a confirmation from Vodacom that they will continue to pay out at least 75% of headline earnings. And on the other hand, you have to know that Safaricom, which has got 65% market share in Kenya and has a return on capital employed over 50% and 38 million M-Pesa customers in Kenya alone, is quite a beast. So there is a lot of congratulations going around for the Vodacom Group CEO, Shameel Joosub, and I think they're well earned. On another front, we had that letter from the United States, or announcement or statement from the United States, which was, of course, responded to by South Africa in kind. The U.S. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, had another swing at what he describes as the ANC-led South African government. He used quite a bit of strong language as well to explain why next year America will be inviting Poland to the G20 and not South Africa. His point was that South Africa has fallen off the top 20 economies globally, and that Poland is now in there, and it does help that, from his perspective, that Poland is a friend. In an interview, the chief executive of our most valuable bank, First Rand, Mary Vilakazi, urged businesses in South Africa to look past the headlines because they are unhelpful. But she suggested that instead of getting despondent, we should rather look at the actual relationships between South African businesses and those in the United States, and indeed with U.S. technocrats. And she said those remain solid. Mary is the feature of our first deep dive for today. And this came on the back of Tuesday's trading update from First Rand. What they do is, ahead of the half year and the full year results, companies in South Africa, the big ones in particular, like to let their shareholders know how things are going. They've now entered into what is called a closed period, so they can't talk between now and between the end of the week and when their results are released, which is in March. So it's quite a dead time. So they like shareholders to not sell their shares due to not knowing what's actually going on in the company. So that's why they have these trading updates. Although that's very solid and strong, and I don't think any First Rand shareholder will be disappointed reading the trading update in the way the company is performing. For the rest of us, the real story is in their reading of the South African economy.
At the moment, we are feeling quite constructive around the opportunities that are going to present themselves. So, you know, I guess the environment that we are in, we've seen the latest GDP print. It was the fourth consecutive uplift, actually, I think in GDP growth. We're moving from a very low base. So I guess, Alec, but we take comfort in the fact that we're moving in the right direction. We are starting to see credit extension lifting. And this time around, it's actually driven by corporates and you know, medium-sized businesses. Remember, in the past, whenever we saw a credit cycle, it would be consumer-led, which is not really what South Africa needs. So that being led by corporates and commercial, we think that's a constructive cycle. The structural economic reforms should again continue to provide corporates really with an opportunity of doing more. I think Transnet is already showing what can happen. You know, the fact that we're getting locomotives that will be refurbished in Rosslyn, as announced yesterday. I mean, those are the kind of things from a fixed investment point of view that the economy requires. So on the back of structural economic reforms, we think there's more that can come here, that it's obviously good for medium-sized and small businesses in time to come. So, yeah, so we are hoping to capture and I think really facilitate quite a lot of productive capital formation on the back of the structural economic reforms and businesses that see opportunity and want to borrow money to invest in the economy.
That full interview is in what we call the director's cut. You'll find that at biznews.com/briefing. Yesterday afternoon, I caught up with the Democratic Alliance leader, John Steenhuisen, to quiz him on some criticism that has been very publicly made about his leadership and other issues of a personal nature. The conversation, though, did also turn to his portfolio, agriculture, where I asked him for a message to South Africa's farmers who are at the moment really struggling due to the foot and mouth disease epidemic.
The first thing to say is that we hear you and see you, and you know, we've listened to the pleas. I want to make it very clear that since I became minister, I've done a number of very key interventions that have never been done before in South Africa. The first of those was making it possible for industry bodies, like the Red Meat Industry Body, the Milk Producers Organization, to purchase vaccines through government, but directly with the Botswana Vaccine Institutes, that they can build up vaccine banks for their members. That was never allowed before. I've also announced in the last fortnight a policy change in that we're going to follow the same model that Brazil, Argentina, and some of our other contemporary countries have used to get on top of foot and mouth disease, and that is to set about a vaccination of the entire national herd. It's become very clear that the efforts that we've used to date are not working. People are not respecting the disease management areas. People are still moving animals, despite the fact that there are restrictions. People are still selling animals. People are still taking animals across borders. And obviously, it's impossible for us to block every road in the country to prevent this from taking place. So drawing lines on a map that are in an office in Pretoria isn't going to get the disease under control. So what we're about to embark upon now, and we've already started, is a mass vaccination campaign.
We close off the week with Flip Funimava. He is a Springbok rugby star, now retired, who is a business strategy consultant in France and the co-founder of the LACA Network, which brings together SAFRs from all around the world. My colleague Linda van Tilburg caught up with Flip this week.
Former Springbok lock Flip Funimava has swapped the scrum for the boardroom and is now a strategy consultant in Biarritz, France, bringing the same high-performance lessons he learned on the field to business leaders around the world. As a proud South African abroad, he's also co-founder of the LACA Network, the fast-growing platform that keeps South Africans connected wherever they are. Speaking to us from France, he calls Coach Rossi Erasmus a true visionary and says the Springboks are only at the tip of the iceberg of emerging talent.
So we need to constantly evolve as athletes. It's like your main aim is to constantly be better. Every year you need to reflect on how you went and then become a little better. And I'm finding the same works in business. It's just little steps. So I'm a strategy consultant. Linda, so before you fall asleep, I guide leaders to and help them to make the difficult decisions, to make decisions as to where they're playing, how they want to win, what products that the market needs, just a little bit, get leaders out of the day-to-day work and make them, take a high level view of the business and just see what is going on and can we see the wood for the trees, you know. I believe in role models and what they mean, and through the whole of my career I've had incredible role models, you know. Biggest living legends, probably, you know, a guy like Rossi Erasmus, which I had the privilege as a student to play with and then to play under as a coach, and much of the innovation and that then carries through into the rugby world today, you know, is something that we can use in the business world. At Rossi and his whole team of coaches, we have to say, and players, they're doing incredible work as Springboks, and I think we are going into an exceptional generation of talent that the Springboks can find, and also, you know, I very strongly believe that we're only at the tip of the iceberg in terms of talent that it's coming through. If we see the talent currently at Kramer Week, currently at under 21s, etc., there's so much talent still coming through South Africa. The aim of any South African living abroad is to unite the South Africanness. I'm very bullish on South Africa and South Africans and what we do. And, you know, like myself, many of us are overseas for whichever reason, and we've got a hunger to make South Africa work. And I think the LACA Network is a great vehicle to do that. You know, you don't have to be an Elon Musk or a Rupert or et cetera to have a positive effect on South Africa. It's normal, everyday South Africans everywhere across the country that make a lot of difference.
And now you have the edge. For the full interviews and the details behind these stories, head over to biznews.com. I'm Alec Hogg. Thank you for starting your morning with us. Now go and seize the day.